How's it going, guys? Good to see you guys here tonight. I don't know if we have any history fans in the audience. It's okay. If not, I will be honest, it's not really my thing. But I came across a story the other day that I found really interesting. So I'm just going to share it with you guys, okay? Okay, on September 26th of 1960, about 70 million Americans sat down to watch the first ever nationally televised presidential debate between Richard Nixon and John F. Kennedy. And up until this point in history, presidential debates, they had mostly been like broadcast over the radio. And that just means like, you know, what a radio is, obviously. But people were tuning in. They were listening to the voices, to the arguments made by these candidates. But they couldn't really see what was like happening in the room. And going into this debate, Nixon, he was favored as the kind of like the winner of the election, the predicted winner, at least. He had been vice president for like 8 years, and he was known to be kind of a savvy politician, a good communicator, and he was, at this point, he was in the national polls leading by 6 points. And so for a lot of people, they just thought that this debate would kind of be a slam dunk for Nixon. And the people who didn't watch on TV that night, the people who still tuned in on the radio, which was common, right, that seemed to be the case. Like, what they heard is that Nixon held his own. Like, he communicated well. He answered the questions clearly that he was given. And so they came away from the debate with the perspective that Nixon, he was probably going to win. He was probably going to win the election. But here's what's crazy. Anybody who was watching on TV, they came away from this debate with a completely opposite perspective. And that's because when the debate started, it was clear that Nixon was not feeling so hot. See, he had just recently come out of the hospital, and it really showed. Like, he was pale, he looked really tired, and he was just sweating the whole way through. Kennedy, on the other hand, he was like this young, handsome guy who was in stage makeup. And as it went on, it was clear the people watching were drawn in by Kennedy's experience, his appearance, his presence in the room, his calm confidence that you could see right there. And so from their perspective, Kennedy, he had the upper hand. He was the one who was going to be the next president. And over the next couple days, Nixon, his lead started slipping. And by November, Kennedy pulled ahead and he won the election. Now, I know this is an odd story, but I think it's fascinating because it reveals something about us as people. I think it reveals that it is all about perspective. Like in this debate, there are two perspectives, okay? One is that Nixon is a good politician, known politician at least, a good communicator, a decent debater. And so people who were listening to him, they honed in, they focused on his arguments, his communication. But then there's this other perspective where they see that he looks like death in comparison to the other guy standing next to him. And so if they're watching him, they're focused on the sweat rolling down his face and the bags under his eyes. Their perspective had a huge implication on their opinions, and ultimately, it changed the way that they voted. And I've just been thinking about this story a lot, honestly, because it's made me start to think, okay, well, all right, what's my perspective on things? Like, I don't know, what do I focus on in life? What do I give attention to? What do I sort of hone in on? And what is that perspective have to do with how I live, what I think about the world, what I do with my life. So I started kind of thinking about it over the last couple weeks, and I quickly realized, okay, I definitely have a certain perspective on the world, and it's one that I'm not all that proud of. Like, if I'm being honest with you guys, I would say that I am someone who I tend to focus on the negative. Like, in a day, I tend to hone in on whatever, the problems that I'm facing, the conflicts that I'm in, the hardships that I see in my day-to-day. I'm prone to think of the things that I just wish were different, that I want to fix. I give my attention to the issues that I see right in front of me, the issues that I know are here and now. Like I said, not proud of it, but that's kind of sometimes it's my default perspective. And it has an effect on the way that I live. Like for real, some days I wake up and I'm already just like a little bit anxious. I'm already kind of burdened by the day ahead of me. Or I can feel myself easily getting frustrated, annoyed at small things that don't go my way. I can feel like my brow kind of like knit together, my chest tighten, my mood shift if there's, I don't know, a problem at work or a conflict with a friend. And I just get exhausted sometimes by any difficulty that the day throws my way. And I sincerely hope not, but I wonder if you guys can relate at all to what I'm talking about. Like, I wonder if to some degree, a lot of us feel this perspective, to some degree. If we're prone to think of the negative, it's natural, right? It's natural to kind of get caught up in the negative because, quite frankly, there are a lot of problems, hardships, trials, difficulties, confusions, frustrations, you name it, when it comes to our lives. But it's not even just our lives. It's all around us. Like, all you have to do is open a news app and you'll see headlines about natural disasters, wars, violence, injustice, disease, all of it. We cannot ignore it. It is because of the messiness of the world. It is our default to often focus on, give attention to what is wrong in our lives because it's front and center. It is right in our face. But that perspective, that's going to take a toll on you and me. And if you don't quite believe me, let's just do an experiment. Just think about your last week, okay? And let's answer a couple questions. You can write it down. You can think on it either way. But just ask yourself these questions. This past week, where did you focus on the negative? Like, what things happened that made you start to feel frustrated, discouraged? What made you feel kind of anxious, grieved, burdened? Or did you feel overwhelmed or exhausted? What circumstances, what things happened that just felt too big or too scary for you to even really deal with? 2, how much of your day is consumed by that perspective? Like, how often are you giving attention to things like anxieties, fears, frustrations? How much do you fixate on what is going wrong in your life? What's wrong with the world around you? How much time? And then finally, 3, what's that doing to you? Like, what effect is that having on the way that you're living? How does that impact your relationships or, I don't know, your decisions, your actions, your words, whatever it is? How's that going? What's it doing to you? Those are kind of downer questions. I get it. I know that is not what we totally came in ready to think through tonight, but I ask those questions because I think that our perspective really matters. I think our perspective matters, and a lot of us just tend to get caught up in the negatives, the problems, the hardships that we're facing, and it is affecting how we live. So I think then the question has to be, right, is there anything we can do to fix it? Like, is there any way to stop focusing on the negative? Is there any way to stop honing in, fixating on the problems, the hardships that are right in front of us, always in our face? Well, fortunately, the answer is yes. Yeah, there is a solution to this. But if we want to find it, if we want that solution, if we want to fix this, we're going to need a better perspective. We need a better perspective. So tonight, we're jumping back into Daniel. We took a short break last week, but tonight we're jumping into Daniel again, and we're picking up in a chapter that is all about perspective. But I'm going to warn you, this is when things get kind of weird in Daniel. And it's because Daniel is split into two halves. And the first half, the half that we've been in leading up to now, has been a collection of stories. Stories about Daniel, our main character, and his friends, and their attempts. They're doing their best to live faithfully in Babylon, which is a culture that does not know, does not follow God. But now what we're doing, we're heading to the second half. And the second half is a collection of testimonies from Daniel. And so in the next couple weeks, we're going to hear things like some visions that he has and some supernatural events that he sees, some conversations with angels that he has. So basically just some like really normal stuff is what we're getting into, okay? You ready? The second half of Daniel, this is called apocalyptic literature. And if you have heard of, know of apocalyptic literature in the Bible, if you've read any of it, you know that pretty often it's kind of strange stuff. It's pretty weird. But the word apocalyptic, it comes from a Greek word, apokalupto. And what that means is to unveil. That word means unveil or reveal. So in the next couple chapters, what we're going to see is this literature, these testimonies from Daniel, what they're doing is they're unveiling mysteries. They're uncovering truth, and they're revealing what is to come. So that's what we're doing. We're going to see some bigger pictures. We're going to see the zoomed out perspective. We're going to get a new perspective. Okay, so it's kind of like, you can liken it to if we went to space, right? And we suddenly see the entire world from above, okay? That's a real picture. I don't know why. I just don't believe it. Looks painted or something, but that's a NASA picture. And so we can imagine, like, what would it do to your concept of the world if you suddenly saw it from outer space? To go from just like living your life, you know, driving in cars, hanging out in buildings, doing your dang thing, and then suddenly being pulled so far out that you can see the entire globe beneath you. How would that change your perspective of how you see your understanding of the world around you? When astronauts go to space, a lot of times they actually experience this perspective shift. It has a name. It's called the overview effect. And it's when it causes people to kind of be hit with emotions that they've never had before. So suddenly they feel this sense of like connectivity to the rest of all of humanity. They're struck with awe and appreciation and this sense of beauty in ways that, again, they've never, ever experienced. Their perspective is completely, fundamentally changed, and it impacts the way that they live from then on. So that's what we're getting into tonight in chapter 7, okay? In chapter 7 of Daniel, he has this vision, and it fundamentally changes his perspective of the world around him. So let's dive in. Okay, chapter 7, verse 1, it says, "In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions of his head as he lay in his bed. Then he wrote down the dream and told the sum of the matter." Okay, if you were with us a couple weeks ago, you might recognize, hold on that, go back. Yep, you might recognize that name Belshazzar because he's from chapter 5. And he was the guy who lost the entire Babylonian Empire to the Persians. And it happened on that crazy night, if you remember, where a hand appeared at a party and it wrote a message on a wall. You guys, that ringing bells? Okay, if it is, well, this is, we find out that chapter 7, it's a flashback. So we're back in the time where the Babylonians ruled, where King Belshazzar has control of the empire, and in it, Daniel has this vision, okay? And now let's move on to what the vision actually is. Verses 2 and 3, they say this, "Daniel declared, 'I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And four great beasts came up out of the sea, different from one another.'" Okay, kind of getting weird a little bit, right? So if we're in Daniel's vision, like if we're envisioning it on our own, what we might see is like this big ocean, and it's just tossing and turning in the wind. Like we can imagine that there's dark clouds everywhere, that waves are just crashing. And just from this picture, just that picture of the sea, we start to get this sense that something is not quite right about this vision. It's kind of like in a horror movie where, like, things are fine, and then all of a sudden it pans over to the open basement door and creepy music starts. And you're like, something's not good here. We just get this sense that something is wrong, and we know that especially if we know that in biblical times when Daniel's writing this, that the sea, it was often used as like a metaphor, a symbol for things like chaos and uncontrollable evil and death. So from the get-go, we know that things are not quite right in this vision. And then our suspicions are almost immediately confirmed when what pops out of the ocean, of this sea, but four giant beasts. And this vision, it's going to go on, and it's going to explain what these beasts were like. So, ready? It's going to get weird, really weird. And I'm just going to kind of encapsulate, summarize what these are for you. So, buckle up. Okay, here are the four beasts. Beast one is like a lion, and it has eagle's wings on its back for some reason. But as it rises out of the ocean, these wings are torn off, and the whole thing stands up, and it is given, get this, the mind of a human. Okay, super weird. Moving on to beast two. Beast two is like a bear, and as it rises, it has a set of ribs already in its jaws, and it is told to go and eat its fill of flesh. Okay, that can't be good. Okay, what about beast three? Well, beast three is like a leopard. That is, if a leopard had four wings on its back and four heads that came out of its neck. And this beast three, is told to go have authority and rule. But then there's beast four. And beast four is so terrifying, so enormous, so strong that Daniel, he can't even find an animal to compare. That's how scary it is. But it has iron teeth. It's devouring everyone. It's trampling everything underfoot. And it has 10 horns on it. But as Daniel is watching, this is so weird. A little horn sprouts up and it replaces three of the other horns. What's happening? But here's the kicker. That little horn, it has human eyes and a human mouth. And it starts just like shouting crazy stuff against God. What is happening? What are we supposed to get from this? Well, see, these images, what we're supposed to get here is of monsters, like of true agents of evil and violence and destruction. How horrifying must that have been for Daniel to see this? Like, if you can just think of your scariest nightmare, the one where you woke up and were just paralyzed with fear. Like, you're all sweaty, you can't move, you're afraid of everything, even though you know you're awake. This is what it must feel like for Daniel as he is seeing these beasts in his vision. But it's not just a dream, it's not just a nightmare for him, it is a vision. And Daniel knows that it is a vision of what's to come, but he doesn't quite understand what it all means. And so what he does in verse 15, while he's still in the vision, he goes over to somebody nearby, an angelic being, and he asks this angel to explain it all to him. So the angel says, okay, here we go. Here's what it's all about. These beasts, they are four kingdoms that are coming. And beast number four, it is a kingdom more terrible, more violent, more destructive than anything before. And those four, and those 10 horns on beast four, those are 10 kings from that kingdom. But that little horn is another king that comes after all of them. And he is the worst of all. He wages war against God's people. He oppresses them. He destroys them. Just put yourself in Daniel's shoes for just a second. Because if you know this story so far, he has been in exile for decades. Okay? So this is you. You have been in exile for decades, years. You have lived in an empire that crushed your nation, that destroyed your temple, that stole your people, and put you in a land that is not your home. You have had to follow God in a place that opposes him for years and years. And now you are being told, this is just the beginning. There are kingdoms after kingdoms after kingdoms that are coming to dominate and oppress and destroy God's people. How would that hit you? Like, what would that do to your perspective on the world around you? How would it affect the way you live if you know that this is the pain, this is the hardship, this is the trial that you have to endure indefinitely? What does that do for us? Well, for some of you, you don't have to imagine. You know what it feels like. Not literally, right? Like, we don't live in a time or place here in the States where there are kingdoms and kings and that kind of oppression, but you know what real hardship feels like. I don't know what it is for you exactly, but you are dealing with things like grief and sickness, pain, tragedy, loss, confusion, despair. It all feels right in your face, and you are thinking, when will this end? When will this stop just consuming me? Will I ever see the end of this? How long do I have to endure? Will it ever, ever let up? Sometimes I think the beasts in our life, they are the only thing that we're able to see. The monsters that we face, whatever they are, they can grab our attention and take our whole life, take it all over. And in those times, that's when we need a better perspective. We desperately need a better perspective. Now, fortunately, Daniel's vision, there's more to come. It's not over, and there is another perspective. See, in the midst of these beasts that come out of the ocean, in the midst of the chaos and the destruction, Daniel, he ends up looking up and he sees a completely different scene. In verses 9 through 11, what he sees when he looks up into the heavens are these fiery thrones where the Ancient of Days, God himself, is seated on the center seat. And he is watching, and the beast is killed, finally. And as it seems like the vision could be, should be, maybe wrapping up, Daniel notices that there's another figure. There is another someone who is arriving. This is how he records it in verses 13 and 14. He said, I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, there came one like a son of man. And he came to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. And to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. Okay, so who is that? Who is that person who is presented to God himself, who was given authority and dominion? Who is this person who is both human and divine? Human because he's given the term Son of Man, a very human term, but divine because he came riding on the clouds of heaven, something that only God does in the Old Testament. Who is this? Well, Daniel actually, he doesn't get an answer in this vision, not really. And God's people, they don't really get an answer for another 600-ish, almost 600 years. They're left to wonder, they're left to wait, to endure until kingdoms have come and gone, until there is a man who is named Jesus, and at the end of his life, he stands on trial before the great high priest Caiaphas. And it is only at this man's trial, Jesus' trial, when Caiaphas asks Jesus, are you the Christ? Are you the Messiah? Are you the promised Savior? Are you the one who is coming to set God's people free? Are you the one that we have been waiting for? It's only then that we get the full picture. It's only then that we get the better perspective, because when Caiaphas asked Jesus that, this is how he responds in Mark 14. He says, I am the Christ, and you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power and coming with the clouds of heaven. Jesus says, it's me. I'm the one. I'm the Son of Man who is presented to God and seated on his throne. I'm the one who defeats the beast. I'm the one who is given power and glory, authority, dominion, not the kingdoms of the world, not the monsters that we face, but me. I am on the throne. And that's the perspective that we need. When it feels like all we can see is the giant beast that is standing in front of us, the monsters that haunt us day by day, the things that we face, when we feel overwhelmed by the problems, the hardships, all the concerns and the frustrations and the fear and anxiety that we face, when it feels like that is all we can see, we have to look up. We have to look up and see the heavenly perspective. We have to see the perspective that says that Jesus is king and he has already defeated the beast for us. See, when we have this perspective, this heavenly perspective, it does a couple things for us. First, it frees us from only being able to see the beasts in our lives. Like with this perspective, we can stop only focusing on what is going wrong in our day, our life. With this perspective, we can stop fixating on the fears and anxieties and hardships that are right there in front of us. There's something else going on. See, we are not ruled by the beasts. They don't have power over us. Whatever you're facing, the hardships that you're going through, they cannot define, they cannot own, they cannot destroy you. We can fix our eyes on the heavenly perspective. We can fix our eyes and know that Jesus is the true king of our lives. He's the one with the authority. So this heavenly perspective, it frees us from only seeing the beast, but it also empowers us to live faithfully as exiles, to follow God in a culture that largely does not. See, if he has all power, all authority, then we have nothing to fear, legitimately nothing. We can live really bold lives because we know that we've got the king at our side. We do, which means that we can face real problems, real hardships, with real joy and real peace. We can do things like show selfless, sacrificial, genuine love to people who disagree with us or disregard us because of what we believe. We can be generous with things like our time and our money and our resources. We can forgive people who hurt us. We can follow God. We can choose to follow God even when we know that it probably will, definitely will, make our lives harder sometimes. See, we can endure whatever life throws at us, whatever it is, all because we have the better perspective. Jesus is on the throne. Jesus is on the throne. See, our perspective, it's going to shape how we live. So instead of honing in, focusing in on the world around us and the wrong that we see in our life and everywhere else, instead of doing that, let's look to the heavens. Let's look to the heavens and know that God has already won the battle. And he is empowering us, freeing us, to live as his people here and now. To kind of wrap up, there's a passage in 2 Corinthians that I really love, and I have to go back to it pretty often because it reminds me of what is true, like what's actually true and real. So as the music team comes back up, I'm just going to read you these verses because they've given me at least a lot of hope, a lot of freedom, a lot of joy, a lot of peace. They have given me the perspective that I need to live here and now in this world. Okay, so the verse, it's 2 Corinthians 4, verses 16 through 18, and they say this: therefore, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is seen, unseen, is eternal. Do not lose heart. Don't lose heart. I know that what you see in your life, what we see every day, is hard. It's sometimes discouraging. It's exhausting. And sometimes it can feel like we are just wasting away, but that is temporary. And there is a better perspective, a true perspective. We can't quite always see it, but the reality is that Jesus is actually with us. He's actually renewing us day by day, and we have an eternal glory on the way. We do. That's the perspective that we can fix our eyes on. The better perspective, it is the heavenly perspective, and it is the perspective that Jesus is already on the throne. Let's pray. Jesus, our King, we thank you for being the one who has come to conquer death, to be with us, to rule in goodness and love and power over our lives. Jesus, there are sometimes where it just feels like the things that we're facing are too big, they're too difficult, that they're all we can see, that they're taking hold of our life in this overwhelming, all-encompassing way. But Jesus, we know that there's another reality, another perspective to look to, and it's that you are our King. You are on the throne. And so I pray that whatever we're dealing with tomorrow, next week, throughout the rest of our life, that we would have confidence. Confidence that you are the one with all power. Anything else doesn't compare. It doesn't have the rule over us that it claims to. And we just pray that that would help us live boldly. Help us share your name. Help us love people well. Help us live in exile until we see you face to face. Jesus, we love you. And it's in your name we pray. Amen.